Welcome to the Carol Danvers Show. We are your hosts, Louis Patzner,
Ariel Wang,
and this is the podcast about the Marvel Comics character Carol Danvers,
aka Ms. Marvel or Captain Marvel,
or binary.
Really? And
yeah, that's after Ms. Marvel, Volume 1.
Uh-huh.
She goes through some changes.
Oh, okay.
And maybe she has another name, too. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Last episode, we talked about the movie Captain Marvel, which, if you haven't seen, we recommend.
Yes.
And, but normally what we do is we go through the issues of her appearances in the comics, starting with Ms. Marvel of Volume 1, Number 1 in 1977. And we are on issue number 8, which is what we will discuss today.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this, so we're looking at the cover here.
In Death's Dark Waters.
Yeah.
She makes her last stand against the man monster, Grotesque.
And
I wonder who's gonna win. I mean,
well, Grotesque won last time.
That's true.
In issue number 6.
But if it's the last stand, what does that usually mean?
Well, that's just the way to sell comics.
Uh-huh.
And the cover is Grotesque's arms and fists holding Ms. Marvel underwater. And she looks angry. Should we talk about issue 6 a little bit? Just a recap?
Yeah, sure.
Basically, there's this thing called a Cavorite crystal, which is a really powerful crystal that, if you know, especially your X-Men, Dr. Peter Corbeau and Carol Danvers were talking about it in a flashback, and he was saying that it could be used as the key for faster-than-light space travel.
Is this the Tesseract of the movies?
It's like that. You know what I mean? I read that in Captain America, the first Avenger, the first Captain America movie, that the Tesseract was originally the Cosmic Cube, which is another kind of, you know, super powerful relic in the Marvel Universe.
Which we've then later find out it's an Infinity Stone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right. Right. They decide to go in that direction. So, basically in Ms. Marvel number 6, we meet Grotesque, who's a villain from 1960s X-Men. He was the Prince of Subterranea, which was like a totally underground civilization that got wiped out by mankind's nuclear experiments, atomic experiments. And so he's pissed and he's kind of trying to get humanity back. And he ends up stealing the Cavorite crystal.
Right, and she ends up being buried in rubble. And then some other things happen with
him. Yeah, so then she gets captured by AIM and MODOK. We realize MODOK has kind of been watching her this whole time.
Uh-huh.
And the villain behind the scenes. But then she basically, that whole issue is her escaping from AIM's secret headquarters, which is beneath this department store, Alden's department store. And so that's basically where this issue picks up. We have Chris Claremont authoring this, Jim Mooney, Joe Sinnott as the artists, Joe Constanza, or John, J. Constanza, letterer, D. Warfield, colorist, Archie Goodwin, editor.
So they're at Alden's, and Carol Danvers has told S.H.I.E.L.D. that AIM headquarters are there, and that she got a tip from an informant.
Yeah.
And so they're at Alden's, and they are doing a search for the AIM headquarters.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to look up this guy's name. Yeah, so there's people in S.H.I.E.L.D. outfits. that are kind of silly to me.
They don't look all that different from the AIM outfits. When I first saw this, I was confused.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're clearly from S.H.I.E.L.D.
And they're searching the floors, and they're not finding anything.
Larry Rogers, one appearances, apparently. So this is it. He's just a random, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. dude.
So they're still searching, and there's this guy, Mr. Elliot, who's just furious that they are searching the store. And Carol is saying that, you know, her informant was positive that AIM has its New York headquarters hidden in the store. And Larry doesn't really quite believe her because the search is coming up with nothing.
And do you look at her necklace? Does it remind you of anything?
The Black Panther?
Yeah, that's what I thought. She has this necklace of, like, teeth.
Oh, yeah, that's like the Black Panther suits.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I think that's just a coincidence.
Right.
So basically, their search comes up with nothing, and Carol's like, I'm telling you, I stand by my source, but Larry Rogers, he's just like, we have to call it off. We're not finding anything, and the guy from the store is really pissed, and he's like, you'll be hearing from my attorneys.
Yeah. Sorry isn't good enough, Mr. High and Mighty S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Alden's is a reputable store, and I won't have its name sullied by your Gestapo tactics. Now get out! You'll be hearing from our attorneys. Yeah, that guy's, you know, he's pissed. But later we find out, well, so, you know, they leave, and Carol Danvers says she stands by her informant, and Larry says, well, it isn't here now. If it was, our portable sensors would have spotted it. Oh, man, how I let you talk me into this harebrained stunt.
And she goes, Larry, the base is still here, and you've got the authority to dig it out. Come on, pal, you owe me that much at least.
And he says, no way I stuck my neck out for you today, Carol, and I'm about to get chopped off for my trouble. As far as I'm concerned, our debts are canceled. And she's frustrated, and then one of her reporters shows up and asks her if she wants a lift.
Yeah, Gianelli.
And we find out that the AIM headquarters are in fact there, and that this dude, Mr. Elliot, is actually an agent of AIM, and that they use deflectors to block the S.H.I.E.L.D. portable sensors, and Agent Elliot's performance got rid of them so that they wouldn't have come back with more sophisticated equipment, which would actually detect that AIM is there. But now they are speculating how Carol Danvers found out that that's where the headquarters were.
Right, and they say detail an action squad to handle Danvers. If necessary, have her terminated. And I think Larry Rogers maybe did get fired for this. You know what I mean? Because you never see him again.
Yeah. So that's why he only appears once.
So then she's in the car with Gianelli, and
no, she's not in the car. Because he offers her a ride, and she declines it because she wants to take a walk in the rain.
And okay. I thought maybe he dropped her off, but I think you're
right. No. She never gets in the car. And she wants to go on this walk, and it turns out she is also going to meet a potential photographer. And while she's walking, these two dudes kind of see her and want to go harass her, you know.
Hey, Ziggy, catch a look at the downtown fox.
Very nice, my man. Would say we follow along.
It'd show the lady a real good time. Know what I mean, bro?
Ugh.
So she's getting followed by some sketchy-ass dudes. She goes into a bar, and she's kind of confused that it's a bar. She doesn't seem like it's the appropriate meeting place.
Well, because she's meeting a potential photographer, Tracy Burke, And then we later find out that the reason why she's nervous about it being a bar is because, I guess, Tracy Burke, the potential photographer she's trying to hire, has a history of, I guess, alcoholism.
She also says that, like, they thought she was dead.
Right. So I'm kind of curious, you know, what her backstory is.
Yeah, I'm looking it up and I'm not finding much, which means...
So maybe we find out more about her later on?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, she mentions her concerns to Tracy, you know...
Oh, she's in later Captain Marvel comics.
Oh, okay.
This might be her
first appearance.
You know, I looked up Teresa Burke, because that's, I guess, her real name. Mm-hmm. Tracy's like a nickname. Maybe we should look up Tracy.
Mm. So she says, you know... Jameson doesn't want me to hire you. He says you're too much of a risk, and if you're still boozing, Tracy, much as I want you for this job, you are. And she says, I've been on the wagon for 5 years, Carol. All that's in this glass is ice and ginger ale. But I grew up around here. My friends are here, my family, my roots. I need stability in my life. This place helps give it to me. And while they're talking, you can see these two dudes are now, you know, her two stalkers are now sitting at the bar, kind of listening in on what...
Right.
What's happening?
This is Tracy Burke's first appearance, Ms. Marvel number 8. And she's kind of an elderly lady, right?
Right. Although Carol does say, you look younger than I expected.
And then she says, so are you.
So, you know, Tracy says, I'm scared of journalism. It nearly killed me once. And if I enter the rat race again, who knows? But like it or not, I'm a journalist and I can't run for myself forever. Which is... You know, this comic has a lot of characters that are dealing with some self-identity conundrums.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Carol Danvers starts getting one of her flashbacks.
Well, not a flashback. But well, it's her seventh sense.
Which
gives her images from the future.
Oh, so it's not a... Well, I mean, sometimes she gets...
We've seen a lot of flashbacks, too.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's from the Seventh Sense.
Right. So the Seventh Sense really... Oh, right. It gives predictions of what happens in the future. And she sees that there's this beach that's deserted. And then a Federal Aviation Administration radar station from the Air Force. So then all of a sudden there's an explosion, and while she's having her seventh sense flashback, the dudes all of a sudden in the middle of the bar start beating up on her, which makes me think, like, you know, maybe they were sent to do this, because if a dude's like trying to pick up on a woman, the first thing he does is like probably not, even if he's a sleaze bag. You know, the first move is not necessarily to go and, like, smack her in the face in a bar.
Right. Right. Is, you know, in a public place.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this could be the action squad that AIM was talking about.
Right.
But I think maybe it's just some super sketchy dudes.
Some idiots.
But, no, you know, I think it's probably the action squad.
I mean, the guy has a gun.
Yeah.
You know, you don't usually, like, go... Try to, like, you know, mess up, even if you're trying to, like, kidnap and rape someone, which at the first seems to be what they, like, were trying to do, you don't do that in full view of a bar with a gun.
It's true. Yeah, and she says, you know, someone's breaking me out of my seventh sense trance, or she thinks this, and the shock's tearing my mind apart. And then he's like, you hire something, honey bunch?
From now on, when Jacko talks, you listen, dig, or I'll bust your head.
Yeah.
And then she just kind of knees him in the side, and then punches him in the face, and then the guy, you know, with the gun takes a shot at her.
Right, his buddy pulls out a shotgun.
Yeah. but he doesn't have time to reload as she just conks him in the head with a champagne bottle.
Yeah.
And then she's totally, you know, taking him down.
And we see, like, she's thinking like Ms. Marvel, but she looks like Carol Danvers, right? She hasn't changed costumes.
Right. And she says, he's down. Now to make sure he's out. And he's saying, I give up. Stop hitting. And Tracy ends up having to tell her to stop and saying, the man's beaten. Do you want to kill him?
And she thinks, what else does one do with an enemy, woman? Of course, I, oh my God.
And then she says, I'm sorry. I guess I got a little carried away. We better call the police. Yeah. You know, I have to say, I much prefer the way that the movie handled her identity as Ms. Marvel. Because this, like, split personality, dual mind in the same body thing is...
Well, they had, like, you know, 4+ decades to kind of figure out a good way to do it. You know what I mean? And right. This is, like, the first crack at the character.
Right.
I was satisfied that there was, like, some sort of semblance of the dual identity theme.
In the movie?
Yeah.
Sure, but I think at the end of... I mean, the dual identity is... It's more along a continuum. It's not, like, two existing identities at once.
Totally. Well, maybe that'll be in the next movie.
Oh, the two...
I hope not. Yeah.
So, next thing you know, she's on a date with Mike.
Michael Barnett. That's...
Who didn't see this coming?
Michael Barnett was the... is her shrink, basically. It's her friend who is a shrink, and he knows about her secret identity.
Right. And I don't think she necessarily... You know, I feel like maybe the shrinkingness, the therapy didn't come first. They were probably friends first.
I think so, yeah. And she's talking to him about the bar fight. It wasn't me, Mike. It was her, Ms. Marvel, in control. She wanted to kill those men. And I was powerless to stop her.
And then he says, from what you told me, their attack interrupted, shattered a seventh sense trance. The shock probably sent elements of Ms. Marvel's Kree personality surging into your own. See, yeah, this is the part that I'm like a little like, eh.
Well, what I like is that this thing is progressing, right? First, it started out where she has no, either identity has no clue about the other one, really.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then they, in like issue 3, I think, she goes, oh, I'm the same person. Now I know, like, I can access my memories as Carol Danvers and be, you know, super strong and fly and stuff. And then,
you mean as Ms. Marvel?
Yeah, exactly.
And then Ms. Marvel finds out that she can also access Carol Danvers.
Right. Well, that's, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no, I...
And so now, you know, her powers are progressing. We'd never seen her thinking like Ms. Marvel as Carol Danvers, right? So that was new.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is one of the things that I feel like happens a lot in our society is we tend to really, like, box people into certain personalities or expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of do that to ourselves, like, the stuff we don't like is, like, this sort of other, and the stuff that we do like is, like, the stuff we really hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think maybe everyone is a lot healthier if they would just accept all sides.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I went to this with some of my nerd friends to this Harry Potter and the Sacred Text live showing.
That's another podcast that we recommend.
Yeah, it's super great. If you're a Harry Potter fan, I highly, highly recommend it. And while we were there, we were talking about how there's like this like secret psychosis, like, or not psychosis, but like kind of psychotic part of each of us that's like a little like, you know, a little weird and demented and not really that nice.
Mm-hmm.
And is into really like, weird, grotesque things.
Yeah.
And that we all kind of have it deep down inside of us, but we're, like, so afraid of it. But everybody kind of, it comes out in everyone in, like, little weird ways. So, I don't know. I think if we were just more accepting of those parts, and as long as you're not dealing with it in a way that really, like, hurts other people, you know, we're just a lot right. more healthier.
Yeah, anyway. For sure.
Anyway, back to this.
So he's like, yeah, the shock probably sent elements of Ms. Marvel's Kree personality surging into your own. And she goes, and taking over, just like that. Where's it going to end, Mike? Oh, I'm sorry. This was supposed to be a date, not a therapy session.
He says, I don't mind.
And she's like, come on, let's head back to your beach house. He has a beach house? I guess he's a therapist. They do all right, right?
Yeah, especially depends on, you know, who their clients are.
Yeah, right. Right. And she goes, I'll cook you that steak dinner I promised you. And then she said, she thinks to herself, this is the cove I saw of my premonition on the radar station as well. I must have subconsciously been looking for it all day.
And he says, how about a last swim before dinner, okay, Carol? And as she's walking away, she says, sure, Mike. And then he says, look what I found, some nice driftwood for your apartment. Carol? She's disappeared. So Carol is climbing this cliff. So, you know, even without being Ms. Marvel, she's, you know,
she's taking some action.
Some action going on.
And she's formidable.
You yeah, know what I mean? She's climbing up the side of a cliff.
Yeah. And she's in a bathing suit, FYI.
Yes. Which probably makes climbing even harder.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and there's no safety harness or anything. You know, it's risky, I would say.
Yeah. So she goes in and she finds that there's some room under the fence, and she gets a little suspicious because she says, yesterday's rain must have washed out the sand under this stretch of fence. Security was on the ball. The hole would have been filled in first thing this morning.
Yeah, and she would know because she was chief of security at the Cape Kennedy Air Base.
But then she says, on the other hand, what kind of security do you need at a civilian radar station? You know, because if it's a civilian radar station, I'm guessing that, you know, this high voltage fence that's surrounding it is probably unnecessary.
Right.
Still, that electric fence isn't there for show, and those power lines are carrying a lot more juice than an ordinary radar station requires. She checks the guardhouse. The guards are knocked out, and their communication gear is smashed, and she says, holla, there's enough hardware here to equip a small army. So even as Carol Danvers, she's, you know, invoking the Kree, you know, Kree planet. Holla! And then she turns into Ms. Marvel.
Oh, yeah, she does say the holla. Yeah, I mean, so basically, like, when she's kind of on the job, Ms. Marvel's personality starts to kick in. And now, yeah, there's a clear merging happening, right?
Right, or maybe that's just always been there.
Maybe.
In some capacity. You know, maybe Ms. Marvel is just this, like, deeper part of her personality that she is discovering for herself. So she turns into Ms. Marvel because she says, from the look of these men, whatever's happening here is more than Carol Danvers can handle. That makes it a Ms. Marvel problem. Lucky me.
Yeah. And then the next panel, she goes, poor Carol, the effects of the radiation blast that created me still haven't run their course. And she doesn't know how to deal with that. To be honest, neither do I. Whatever happens, though, we can't spend the rest of our lives fighting each other. Something has to give. That, I think, is a really interesting panel, you know. So, basically, it's still a work in progress, this merging of personalities, right?
Right.
Which, yeah, I definitely prefer what's happening now to the first couple issues.
Right.
When they're totally separate.
She says, I wish life's problems were as easily dealt with as this loading dock door. And then she opens the door and finds Grotesque. Grotesque is like, what? Ms. Marvel? Was that the voice I used before? I can't remember.
I think it's a good voice.
But that's impossible! Varric's bones, woman! I left you buried under countless tons of rubble!
Sorry to disappoint you, Grotesque, but a Kree warrior is nothing if not hard to kill.
And she's thinking, what's he doing here? Even the most sophisticated radar station contains nothing that would help him complete his mad quest to destroy the world. Did those guards outside have been unconscious long? Grotesque must have just started work. At least luck is with me.
Then, basically, they start fighting.
Whack, 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 whack.
But she does a good job. She's whooping on him.
Right. And then she discovers that certain bursts of light behind me, the pieces of my seventh sense puzzle are falling into place. This radar station masks a research lab that's testing a military laser cannon. So.
Yeah, dang.
Yeah.
Grotesque is firing a laser into the stolen Cavorite crystal. And that's why the last image was so familiar to Carol. Because I've seen it before, a warp energy implosion. Did she see it? I think maybe she saw it when the Psyche Magnetron exploded or imploded, something like that. Or maybe she just seen it in her vision.
Or was that, like, familiar because that's what happened that made her Ms. Marvel?
That's the Psyche Magnetron.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the previous explosion.
No.
From issue 6. Right.
Oh.
Never mind.
No, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think okay. So. That was like a refinery explosion, right?
Right. So, she sees that that's what this guy is trying to do. And while she's busy looking at it, Grotesque comes up and says, "Arr, lady, and with a laser cannon of this size, I'll trigger an implosion that will destroy the Earth." Sorry, Layla.
He grabs her scarf and starts swinging her around, just like in issue number 6.
Yeah, this scarf, maybe... What does this scarf do?
It makes her look totally sweet.
Well, maybe she doesn't need a scarf. Because even she is like, my scarf, he grabbed right. it again. It's like... like, how many times are people going to grab her by the scarf and swing her around before yeah. she's like, maybe let's ditch these scarves, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But she managed... While that's happening, she kind of... flips around and kicks him in the face with 2 feet. And as she's kind of pounding away at him, he grabs a pipeline of liquid nitrogen. And she's like, if he tears it loose, ... And then we turn the page and it's too late. He's grabbed it. And,
there's an instant of absolute cold. Pipes and conduits shatter under their own weight as they are subjected to a temperature hundreds of degrees below zero. And then an instant later, the pipe's contents boil, the hyper-agitated hydrogen flooding the room, mixing with the free oxygen in the air. All that's needed is a spark, and then, croomp, it's a long fall out across the cove, and neither combatant lands well. Yeah. So basically, there's an explosion and they land on the beach.
Yeah, and Chris Claremont, true to form, has a lot of text explaining it. That's kind of his thing. He, so I've 90% of the comics I've read are by Chris Claremont, because I read a bunch of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And, apparently, other comics don't have as much of this narration. And especially, I've read some modern comics, and then modern comics are really sparse with the text compared to this. Right. But, you know, I like it.
I like knowing what's going on.
I like reading. The pictures are nice, too, though.
It's like comics are the picture books for adults or teenagers.
For all ages.
For all ages. Well, anyway... And
so then they're in the water, and we see Michael Barnett in the background.
He sees her, and Carol.
Yeah.
Miss Marvel. He's killing that...
That bruiser's killing her. There's nothing I can do about it. And she thinks water's hampering my moves. Too deep to get a footing. And so he now has the advantage.
And basically grabs her by the throat and sticks her underwater. chokehold, hands around my neck, like a vice.
And it's not deep, you know. They're like a foot or two underwater. It looks like 2 or 3 feet, maybe.
Right, but he's full-on holding her head mm-hmm. underwater.
Enough to drown somebody.
Yeah. And she's struggling, but he is keeping her down, and...
He kind of monologues about why he's so pissed at humanity.
Which is, I mean, he has good reason to be pissed at humanity. They destroyed his entire race, except him.
Yeah.
And he said, the shockwaves toppled our cities, and the radiation condemned my people to a horrible, lingering death. Last to die was my beloved Princess Ingar. So, you know, he's got vested interests in getting revenge.
Right.
Because that really sucks. Humans yeah. suck.
Sometimes.
Yeah. We're not exactly, you know, angels on Earth.
Right. She goes limp, and then he goes... sees
an energy flare. What? Gods below, that explosion must have disturbed the laser beam. The Matrix interface is reaching critical. I wasted too much time with Ms. Marvel. She must have drowned by now. Not even Gortok could have survived so long without oxygen. I must return to the lab. The power flow to the crystal must be strictly controlled from now on.
And,
So he leaves to go back up to the lab, and she...
She gets up.
Comes up.
Yeah, she was using her biofeedback techniques.
Yeah, what is that?
It's... I don't know. Kree, it's a Kree training thing, you know? I mean, like, humans can be trained to hold their breath for longer than, you know, the average person. Like, Navy SEALs can do this. They hold their breath for, like, 4 minutes or something.
Right. Well, what do they call it?
Navy SEAL training. SUDS. I assume that she flies up.
And she smacks him.
Yeah, she smacks him in the back, and...
And he says, no!
And then she's like, I've got to force a premature implosion.
And he says, I sense what you're trying to do, human witch, but you'll not succeed. And he's coming at her.
He punches her, or he tries to punch her, and...
She deflects it.
Yeah, the caption says it's a killing blow if it connects. And she deflects it, and then she hits him, and they're both on their feet, and he charges at her.
And she realizes that he has backed her up against the laser beam, but she says he's coming after me like a bull after a red flag, but that ends up being to her advantage, because as he's running towards her, she judo throws him right into the laser beam. And she says he's so blinded by his berserker fury that he hasn't realized where I am, which makes it oh so simple for me to finish what that hydrogen explosion began and disrupt the laser. And she says, I wish I didn't have to end like this, warrior, but you see, you're not the only one willing to die for his race. And once she throws him in it, he basically explodes. And this part, I thought, was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's... The laser cuts off, and the cover crystal impossibly screams. It's like the end of the world, time and space twisting apart, unnatural laws unraveling, while stars and planets crash into one another. Like, that's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Considering that that doesn't destroy the Earth, but stars and planets are, I don't know, I was a little confused.
Right.
Maybe there's, like, some other dimensional stuff happening. Light flares, nova bright across the beach, energy field scouring the land clean as they collapse upon themselves, opening up... a gateway into another universe dimension. And then all of a sudden it's over. The gateway closing as suddenly, as terrifyingly as it had opened. And Mike is running towards the beach because Carol has been thrown.
And she's like, he's like, Carol! The radar station, the bluff, there's nothing left but this circle of heat-fused sand. Thank God I got the station guards to safety while Ms. Marvel and Grotesque were in the water.
So he's doing some things, you know?
Yeah, he's helpful. I mean, he's just like, you know, doing what a human man can do, which is
Probably carry some guards off to safety.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's pretty good for us mortals.
Yeah.
And he goes, but Carol, Lord in heaven, her hands. The ground's hard as steel, yet her fingers gouged deep tracks into it, as if she'd been fighting some monstrous pull. Yeah, so basically, I think Grotesque got pulled into another dimension. So that means he could come back. He's not dead.
Yeah, they can't kill him yet, you know? There's got to keep the bad guys around for her to fight. And she says, Michael, is that you? I'm alive. And he says, easy now, love. How are you feeling? She says, numb, but what about Grotesque? He says, gone. Everything for 100 yards gone with him, too. Except the Cavorite crystal.
Oh, yeah. Me. It's right there. They grab it. I missed that.
And he said, why so sad? Ms. Marvel won. And she says, so this is what we were talking about earlier. I was thinking of Grotesque. In his own way, he was a man of honor, fighting for the noblest of causes. I didn't win, Mike. He lost. And then she says, let's go, huh? The evening's turning cold. So they're about to go have steak.
Yes, they are.
At the beach house.
But, you know, maybe he should do the cooking, since she kind of just went through the ringer.
Yeah.
But we don't find out what happens with the dinner, unfortunately.
That's the best part.
And then it says, next, call her Deathbird. Are you stoked?
I'm stoked.
Yeah, Deathbird is badass.
I kind of, like, peeked at the next cover, and she's got, like, claws on her. Like, her nails are, like, claws.
Yeah. I've read quite a few comics with Deathbird in them. Uh-huh. But I don't know how much we should talk about that, because coming up, Ms. Marvel number 9, that's her first appearance.
With Deathbird?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that her first appearance ever?
Yeah.
Oh, so guess we'll find out more about her as time goes on.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay. Did you like this issue?
Yeah. I think it was kind of a sad issue.
It was.
I like that, you know, I mean, AIM is, like, so far obviously, like, the bad guys, but it's nice to have people, you know, adversaries that are a little bit more complex than he bad.
Right.
Destroy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which I feel like a lot of the times that's what happens is, you know, a certain group of enemies or a certain person who's the enemy gets...
You want all your characters to be complex, right, for a good story.
Sure.
So yeah, Grotesque, I think he's cool. I'm down. I'm glad he's not dead. I don't know. I don't know if he ever does come back, but I assume he does.
Well, he is in another dimension, so he has the opportunity to.
Yeah. If you hear some purring, this is Layla. She's on my lap. She's switching
offended.
Around. Yeah, I like the bar fight. I like the progression of her dual identity thing.
I like the introduction of all these new characters. You know?
Yeah.
Tracy Burke.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah, we had a couple of... Well, it was her first appearance, and she does come back, and then we had Larry Rogers' first appearance and only appearance.
Right.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you, guys. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with, Ms. Marvel number 9.
See you next time.
Later. Burp, 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 burp